you see this common theme of him being impulsive and of being able, on the drop of a hat, to go from being extremely jovial, nice, friendly, somewhat loving guy to, in a moment, becoming angry and physical and violent.
At some point, Mr. Bradley, did Aaron Hernandez ask you to help him purchase something?
Yes.
What did he ask you to help him purchase?
He asked me to get him a firearm.
Did he indicate to you why he wanted you to purchase a firearm for him?
Yes, he felt like he needed it for protection. He felt like he was tired of people trying him and felt like people thought he was soft or something and he was out to prove something.
I was not prepared for this. A murder conviction.
Ursula Ward choking back tears.
A murder conviction will not bring my order back, but it will offer me some peace.
Begging lawmakers to change a centuries-old law that cleared her son's killer's name.
Why are you fighting as hard as you are?
Because I'm fighting for the other audience out there that doesn't have a voice. And I wanted to make sure that my voice heard for them.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service.
Hey everybody, it's Lisa Zambetti and I am the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds.
Yes.
We are back to talk about Netflix's eye-opening documentary, Killer Inside.
Like you said earlier, in earlier episodes, this was a perfect storm. There was a lot of things building up in this man who everybody on the outside thought had the perfect life and the perfect home and the perfect career. And there was so much being hidden. And I believe that every single domestic violence call was known about by his teams. And I believe that when he started in college, that it was whitewashed when he got into trouble multiple times. And besides getting into trouble, he nearly killed two people. And that, and the fact that he got away with it, and the fact that nothing has ever been done about it, helped lead him to the point where he killed two people in Boston. Got away with that. Absolutely got away with it. Got acquitted for it. And then killed Odin Lloyd. And was finally brought to task for it.
You've got a car full of three men in Florida. You've then got the two in Boston. Then you've got Odin Lloyd. And then, of course, there's Alexander Bradley, who we haven't talked about.
Right.
Who claims that he shot him in the face.
Right.
And it didn't kill him, but the intention was there to kill him.
I thought that, obviously, we were presented with two sides of that situation. And the jury apparently bought the second side, and that was that there was a drug deal going down and that Aaron Hernandez had nothing to do with shooting him, that he was shot by somebody else. I didn't buy that.
No.
There were too many similarities to all the other shootings and setups and premeditation that we had seen in the past, and it made a lot of sense. The problem is that prosecution has to deal with the witnesses that are witnesses. They can't pick and choose and say, well, I want a better background on this person. This guy was clearly a hardened criminal. This guy was clearly someone who was involved in violent behavior himself. And I just remember the way that he described how the next day he called Aaron Hernandez. And he says, who's this? And he's like, you know who it is. It rang true to me. It just rang true to me. And that tells me that Aaron Hernandez expected him to be dead. So he was there, and he most likely is the one that pulled the trigger. And that's why this guy called him up. But he's a victim. He's a criminal victim, but he's still a victim.
Yeah, but he's still a criminal. He's just come out of prison, apparently, for another shooting in Hartford in a nightclub where he discharged a firearm 11 times. So, you know, like you said, Jim, he was a criminal. That's what he was known for being this hard case and a drug dealer and being violent. Now, whether he was in the car, whether it was the two of them together in Boston, and together they killed Daniel Debreu and Saphiro Furtado, and whether it was Alexander Bradley who was threatening to out Aaron Hernandez, and that's how it happened. But we certainly know he was shot in the face, he survives, and then Aaron Hernandez puts in this very elaborate security system in his house. So he obviously was fearful of him. And then at trial, it would be Jose Baez, who was trying to name the killer as being Alexander Bradley, of course. But he's not the most reliable witness, is he? When he's saying it was Aaron Hernandez, looking at his backstory, he's not a reliable witness at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's Hernandez who has the history of killing in this particular manner, not Bradley. So it just doesn't make sense. And we both know very well the behavior of Jose Baez, and he doesn't care about the truth. He cares about getting his client off, and he's apparently very effective at it. But I think that he got a guilty man, Aaron Hernandez, off for that double homicide, and it's a terrible thing. I don't know how you sit there and sort of rationalize your own behavior because you led to the ultimate conclusion of that story.
Well, as you know, if you throw enough spaghetti at the wall, then you confuse people. And we've seen that many times, haven't we? The confusion of people not really sure what it is they're meant to be judging. And with this case, I think everybody in court felt very surprised, you know, the victims' families, that he was acquitted and it had the outcome that Jose Baez managed to create a very different narrative, or I should say at least enough confusion, enough reasonable doubt that the jury did not convict him. So he gets acquitted. I mean, the irony is he's acquitted of the double murder, and it means that he wants to now appeal Odin Lloyd, but it would be of him being found guilty, the conviction of Odin Lloyd. But it was days later that he's then found dead himself in a cell,
right,
in the facility that he's being held in. And right. Jose Baez said he was totally shocked because Aaron Hernandez apparently was feeling very positive about being free and being acquitted, and the conviction being overturned, I should say, in the Odin Lloyd case, and having Jose Baez as his lawyer.
So he was re-energized to take up the fight again to try to get an appeal for the Odin Lloyd murder. And what did you think of Aaron Hernandez's reaction to his not guilty verdict for the double homicide? I mean, it's the first time you see him have any
emotion.
It's just really interesting.
And it may very well be, as they suggested in the documentary series, that emotion was that, all right, once I get acquitted on this case, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my life because I'm not going to sit in a cage for the rest of my life on the other case. And he knew that he had killed Odin Lloyd, and he knew that the chances of him getting out were minimal. But that could very well be. And we know from case history that many times people who make the decision to commit suicide actually go through a brief period of elation right before they commit suicide. And that may be what Baez describes and what his girlfriend describes. They didn't expect it because he was so upbeat. But the upbeatness is actually based on their decision to end the suffering that they're in.
Yeah, and Jose Baez also colored it with some other facts that he basically said that he was in a lot of pain when he was in prison. He said there were migraines, memory lapses, paranoia, depression. He had pain all over his body. So he was saying this as part of the lawsuit, because there was a lawsuit thereafter. The lawsuit wasn't successful. It was for the fiance and the daughter. So they were suing the NFL for money. But yes, perhaps that elation was short-lived. But Shay, as he called her, he wrote her a suicide note. And he basically said in that suicide note, I'll read it to you. Shay, you have always been my soulmate, and I want you to live life and know I'm always with you. I told you what was coming indirectly. I love you so much and know you're an angel. literally. We split into two to come to change the world. Your characteristics is that of a true angel, and the definition of God is love. Tell my story fully, but never think anything besides how much I love you. This was the supreme, the Almighty's plan, not mine. I love you. Let my daughter know how much I love her. And then these are my boys. And then brackets, you're rich, close brackets. I knew I loved you equals Savage Garden. So just going back to the, I told you what was coming indirectly. So whether that was in his head for some time and he had codified what he was going to do and she didn't pick up on it, or whether she already knew, but he said, you're rich. So the whole abatement issue was clearly in his head. Mm-hmm. That he understood the situation. And of course, he also had John chapter 3, verse 16 on his forehead in ink, and the Bible that was open, that was, it related to this passage: for God so loved the world that he gave us his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to a death quote that Vince Foster had circled in a book of quotes that he left in his office that I was able to find years later. And it's about eternal life or life going on after death. And it tells me that this was somebody who thought about his suicide, who planned this suicide, who thought there would be something good out of it. And that may very well have been the abatement.
We can't sit here and say, this is why he made these decisions, or this is why. We can paint a picture of the things he was going through, but he made these decisions. The decisions lie with him, the consequence lies with him.
It just strikes me, though, why now, or why then did he choose to do it? Why not earlier, if it was really about the abatement? Why not a year earlier after, because, you know, you've been in prison for only 2 years, so why not earlier?
The acquittal of the Boston murders would have been significant for him. I don't think he thought he was going to get acquitted of that. But, and Jose Baez said you can only have an appeal for Odin Lloyd if you're acquitted of the Boston murders. So,
right.
So the fact that he is, that is significant. And then, of course, we know that he was outed, if you will, on a radio show. There was discussion about his sexuality.
That's what I thought was more triggering that, you know, I think a lot of people think that.
Yeah, but he said you're rich.
Well, but it is true. I mean, that's going to be true, but that doesn't mean that that's why he killed himself. I mean,
well, his sexuality wasn't discussed at court. I thought that was very interesting that they all agreed as lawyers to avoid it. Yeah, for his fiance and for other people, but that did come out. But I just want to share with you also what the investigation into him taking his own life found. And it was another inmate who said that he'd been smoking K2 for 2 days straight, you know, just continuously smoking. And he was not in a good state of mind. And one of the prison guards, Gerard Bro, apparently didn't do all the checks, so didn't know what was really going on. He hadn't slept before his shift. So on his shift, he decided to sleep. This sounds very familiar territory, doesn't mm-hmm. it, to a certain Epstein? So he skipped his checks, and it was at 3 a.m. that he saw, he didn't have the keys with him, but he saw that there was something not quite right in Aaron Hernandez's cell. But none of the cell was preserved afterwards. They got Aaron Hernandez down. There was shampoo on the floor. There were all sorts of countermeasures in place, but they cut him down. It took two sets of shears because of the sheets being knotted. Of course, his 240 pounds, 6'5" is a big guy, or 6'4", but the lawyers and others had asked for the cell to be preserved, and the prison authorities disregarded that request and cleaned everything up immediately. Of course, we don't know what other paraphernalia was in there, drugs or so on and so forth, but they cleaned it immediately and they had another inmate go in there straight away, which just sounds very bizarre to me. I'm not saying there was foul play, but when you don't have a clear picture of what went on thereafter. And if he had been smoking for 2 days, then of course his state of mind could change. And he may well feel, well, him saying that he's likening himself to the Son of God.
Yeah.
So it's fairly delusional, really, isn't it? That he's
messianic.
Yeah, being the sacrificial lamb, if you will, for his fiance and his daughter, and he will have eternal life, and his slate will be clean, and he, in his mind, I guess, will be remembered as a good person, and his conviction will be overturned.
The fact that he was smoking for 2 days straight, one, tells me that prison guards were letting that happen. Two, tells me that that's 2 days earlier is when they were mocking him on a radio show about his sexuality. So it tells me that's probably very related, and it might have been the last straw in that decision. But he actually could set his family up a hell of a lot better with this whole abatement idiocy, which fortunately Odin Lloyd's mother helped to undo, which is great because it's such an archaic law, and it actually gives no remedy for the family, and it destroys justice for family members just because someone files an appeal. You know, it doesn't have to be any merit to the appeal. It just has to be an appeal. And it
provides a freakish incentive for inmates to kill themselves. Yeah.
It's terrible.
But it did. I think it was something like 1 in 14 who took their own lives in a prison cell in Massachusetts. You know, they had a high number of suicides.
But when you
because
said
of that abatement.
Yeah. And when you said, Laura, the countermeasures, that's something that other prisoners taught him.
Right.
Putting shampoo on the floor would make it very slippery, so he couldn't rectify the situation himself. He couldn't get himself back up if he needed to. And also, it would be very difficult for somebody to come in and actually get to him and lift him up if they came in at the last second because of the slipperiness of the floor. So it's that kind of thing that tells me this was very premeditated. And did he hear about that and then decide to implement it himself? Or did he actually hoard the shampoo so that he could put it all over his floor? I just don't know. We'll see.
I mean, it does sound like it was planned. He also put something in the door, so it was very difficult to get the door open. So there were a number of measures in place. And I think people ruminate on things for some time. This certainly wasn't an impulsive in the moment decision.
He had time to write 3 letters, right? And I wonder what he wrote to Jose. Who was the other one too? It was his girlfriend, Jose, and
to his daughter.
So Odin's mother, just how much of an amazing woman she is, and how strong she was, and how she wanted to do something good out of all this. And then the other thing was that about when Hernandez was being driven to prison, there's a female fan yells out, "We love you." And then another person that was there said, "How do you love a monster?"
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking selfies with their shirts over their arms. So they're doing the Hernandez thing. And then the other fan saying, "I'm not going to turn my back on him just because there's an accusation on him." That juxtaposed with Odin's friend saying, "I don't want Lloyd's memory to be overshadowed by the celebrity of the person who's accused of killing him." And that, I thought, was an incredibly poignant statement. It happens all the time when celebrities get in trouble, that the victims get overshadowed by the celebrity of the bad guy, the one who caused the pain, the one who caused the suffering, the one who caused the end of a human life. And we have to, as a society, look through this celebrity and actually get down to what's actually happening. And that is, people's lives are taken away, and it's a horrible, horrible thing.
Wasn't that a lovely moment, though, in the documentary when the coach, Mike Branch, who was Odin Lloyd's semi-pro football coach, and he brings the whole team together, and they embrace Ursula Ward and say, "We're here for you. Anything you need, you must call us." I mean, I think that's
absolutely
what we have to put forward and celebrate and be there for the victims and not be the girl, you know, the observer in the crowd saying, "We love you, Aaron." I mean,
It just reminded me of the opposite of what the Catholic Church did in the death of Jennifer Levin. They were in there supporting the guy who was convicted of killing her, the guy who so flippantly made fun of her in a video that unfortunately didn't come out till after the trial was over. What kind of disgustingness is that? Why weren't they at least as supportive of the victim's family? What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Well, it happens often, doesn't it? We've seen it with so many cases. We've seen it with Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman, Ron, who was never even named because the celebrity vil of O.J. Simpson was so much more, and Johnny Cochran calling all the press conferences for O.J. Simpson, you know, lifting up the wrong people. And NFL have been in, you called it in trouble, but players have been abusive and been caught on camera beating their partners. And yet still the questions are asked, well, she went back to him. Why did she go back? And the pass is given to the perpetrator, to the player. And it's up to society. It's up to communities. It's up to us, the mothers, the brothers, the sisters, to hold people to account. We've just had the rape case in Cyprus, where 12 Israeli men were arrested for rape of a teenager who's still not named. And she ended up being arrested herself for what was called public mischief. And those 12 men got on a plane and was celebrating, opening champagne bottles and singing "The Brit is a whore" in Israel. Now, what message does that send out? I'm sure their fathers didn't raise them to be those boys or those men. So it doesn't just happen in celebrity. It's who do we value and who do we honor? And far too often, people are given a free pass because they are a great musician like R. Kelly, because they have a super talent like O.J. Simpson, because they're great at football, like Hernandez.
I believe that if someone had made football less important and Aaron's life and his behavior more important, the outcomes may have been different.
You know, and we value the wrong things. And I think the Me Too movement is part of this, of honoring the victims' narrative and their stories and placing weight on what they're saying, because every time someone discloses, it's an opportunity to prevent the next person being harmed. And this is how serial perpetrators operate. They get away with it and they're lofted on high and their narrative is believed and honored over and above the victims. And I just really have had enough of it. I've seen it in so many cases, and that's why I'm deep diving Weinstein, because this has to be a change in our culture of what we value and who we value, and not dismissing women and girls or boys when they're being abused at home and being seen as somehow it's their shame or their vulnerability. We have to change that script.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Very well said. And I hope that one of the good things that can come out of this country and this world's obsession with true crime is that they're actually learning from it rather than just being, quote, entertained by it. And I do believe that so many women are fans of true crime because of their nurturing spirit and that they want to protect their loved ones from bad things that might happen to them. So I do think there is a positive reason for it. And it is not just a morbid obsession. I think people can learn from the violence that is committed against other people, and they can also learn from the example of people like Odin Lloyd's mother, Ursula Ward, and how she was able to find peace in the aftermath of her son's brutal murder. Even though it tortured her to be there at the trial, she was there the whole time. And the families of the other victims in the Boston case, they were there the whole time. And they had to go through that. Only they didn't get any justice. Even though Ursula was distraught at what she had to sit through and what her son had gone through, she used it for good. She was able to help future victims and their families from being dragged through the justice system and just left out to hang dry.
Absolutely. And again, just for our listeners, when you hear codified language, challenge it. And I can't emphasize this enough. I say it in classrooms all the time. Don't accept when you hear someone say it's a toxic relationship, it's volatile, it's tumultuous, it's turbulent. Ask what someone means. Ask them to describe it. Don't accept underage prostitute or younger women. I mean, still, I hear it, Jim. I still hear these descriptions. See it in the printing press. I see it in an article in Variety where someone's describing Epstein. And still, I'm seeing underage prostitute and young woman rather than girls, underage girls. Oh. So these euphemisms are really problematic and they let people get away with abuse. So please do challenge it. And we do have an opportunity. There are more people who are non-abusive than abusive, but we have to create a cancel culture. We started it with R. Kelly calling him out and mute R. Kelly. We have to create that cancel culture. And I have to say, listening to Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes calling out Weinstein, that everybody knew it was going on. Yes, they did. Why aren't people calling out? And of course, it's happening more now, and I really applaud that. It is important to question and to challenge things and not just accept that it's the female that's done the wrong thing or it's the female who's sleeping with someone to get to the top. You have to question why those narratives are being put into the public domain or why someone's sowing a seed of doubt about somebody. Question it. That's all I'm asking people to do, not say it's one thing or another, but don't just accept.
Look into it, right.
Yeah, and because somebody is more powerful than the other.
Right, and we're going to get into this in a lot more detail when we start our next endeavor, which is Chasing Cosby.
I just wanted to say to all the football fans that are out there, who you love your teams, you love the sport, you love all of the bad, that you need to demand more from your sport. You need to have a bar that's very high that you hold, you take people into account who are souring the sport by their behavior. So I don't want people who love football to think that we hate football. I know we've talked a lot about the consequences of the game, but there is a way to be a fan, but to also understand the risks and dangers and peripheral damage that the sport can have. And I think you just need to be the first ones in line to decry bad behavior and to demand mental health services for these players.
To demand better, and for the leaders to demand better as well. So let's end on a note there where we remember the victims here. And for those of our listeners, if you're tweeting about us talking about this case in particular, if you can use these hashtags as well, we'd really appreciate it. His name was Daniel Dubrow. Hashtag his name was Safiro Furtado. And hashtag his name was Odin Lloyd. And we remember the victims and we remember their families. So thank you so much for listening to Real Crime Profile. This is Real Crime Profile signing out.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
The Case of Sally Challen, The Teacher's Pet, Lynette Dawson, The Exonerated Five and When They See Us, and The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 200 0247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.